What can design achieve as a medium of activism? Are we really using design's full potential in making the world a better place, or are there still a lot of performances of moralism out there? Also, the next generation of designers. What kind of societies are the graduating designers entering into? Does design education teach us enough about the real world and its financial legalities, for example, or do we still only circle around ideas only? This is Helsinki Design Weekly. My name is Anni Korkman, and today I have a bit of a hay fever and also some very special guests from Germany with me here in the studio. I have Charlotte Rode. Is that the proper name, the proper way to pronounce your last name? Yeah,
I think so. Thank you for the invite. I'm also still guessing.
An artist, a type designer and writer, and you're based in Amsterdam. Charlotte is currently the guest professor for typography and type design at the Bauhaus Universität Weimar. Her media span from text, typography and printmaking to installation and object making. Welcome to Helsinki Design Weekly, Charlotte.
Thank you so much.
And next to you, we have Vivian Hoffman, an art director, designer and visual artist based in Berlin. Vivian works in fields of print and digital media with a focus on progressive typography that often seeks to be detached from common standards of functionality. Off screen, she pursues her artistic approach through sculpting and metalwork. Vivian Hoffman and Charlotte Rode studied together in Düsseldorf, and in 2020 they started the project Solitype together. Welcome to Helsinki Design Week.
Thanks for having us. Hey.
So, Charlotte and Vivian, what brings you to Helsinki?
We are taking part in the Creative Festival tomorrow.
Yeah, we're going to give a lecture about also Solitype and kind of our own work also a little bit. And I think we're just very happy to take any occasion to travel and like meet creative scenes in other cities. That's, I always really enjoy that.
I know, you have to make the most of it now when it's possible again.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
After COVID time. So could you tell us a little bit about your individual approaches to type design? And also, what do you mean by type design?
Yeah, I think that's a good question to start off with, because Charlotte and I, we both studied in Düsseldorf, so we had kind of the same starting point-ish. But then we kind of took our type design practice in very different directions. So yeah, speaking for myself, I do more experimental type design. I don't really design full typefaces, but rather custom letterings and yeah, explore letters in themselves. And then Charlotte, maybe you explain yourself.
Yeah, for me, I think I started by drawing more, let's say, typefaces that are usable for many things, like maybe a bit less expressive than Vivian, but like more, better to, like easier to use as tools for many different occasions. But then I did a master's degree in Amsterdam at the Sandbeck Institute, and there they kind of, this is a school for people that want to take design to an artistic level, I think. And there I kind of really got interested in like language and like kind of typography as the intersection of image and language and like the embodiment of writing. Also in a feminist context.
Thank you. That sounds very interesting. So, and how did you two find each other? What made you work together in the first place?
Also a good question. I think we've always been in touch since we studied together, right?
Actually before.
Even we before, met before, that's true,
I think in 2011, and then we started studying together in 2013. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of lost touch.
Yeah.
And then I think we just noticed that we were both posting a lot of political Instagram stories, and we were chatting about that.
Yeah, and that's how we reconnected, actually. We were always catching up about what's going on, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
And then the fire in Moria happened, and afterwards we both felt like really, really helpless and also frustrated with like design in like a Paul Rand way of kind of only focusing on aesthetics and form and kind of dismissing content or what it is about. And I think this is when we thought, like, in a very pragmatic way, like, what can design do? Like, yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. I think we were both questioning our own work and the meaning of it. And then also, I don't know, I think like the type design scene nowadays is obviously happening a lot on social media, and a lot of people have a big platform. And we were also discussing how do you deal with the platform if you have one, and how can you be responsible and use it maybe in other ways than just promoting your own work. So that's how we started talking about.
Yeah, I think also because there's like this kind of in-between level of like activism that kind of looks good, or like people making posters for certain. I think it was very popular amongst designers within the first like weeks of Corona to make like posters about mask wearing or something. But I think we just wanted to like be more effective in the sense of like going beyond staying within the echo chamber of like addressing the people that we already address anyways.
That can be so powerful, realizing that everything also behind those images and the structures that we try to design are also designed in a way. I suppose why I was asking about you two beginning to work together was also because I'm obsessed with collaboration and collaborative methodology and creativity in general. And I guess I also would like to know what's it like sharing a creative process with someone.
I think between the two of us, it's just been super low-key and easygoing. It's more a friendship vibe rather than co-workers. I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
It's always been very easy to work together, and I feel like we're just texting and we share a Google Doc and just throw in ideas, have little mood boards, mind maps, whatever, and just
I think it's also because we approach the project in a super pragmatic way and we really trust each other, so like we just divide tasks, and I think there's very little ego happening we just both really want to like collect money, you know, like we just focus on the money, not for ourselves, yeah, but like I think there's just not so much ego, and I think even though we have very different approaches, we kind of really value each other's work, and that's it.
So as mentioned, you two will be speaking at the Huiput Creative Festival, which unfortunately when this episode airs on Thursday and again on Saturday will be in the past. But I do know that in your presentation you will be sharing some projects and milestones in your careers that have had an impact on the political views that you now also present in your work. So perhaps you'd like to give some examples of those moments that led to you into working with or circling around the question of what design can achieve as a medium of activism rather than working in a branding agency.
Actually, we restructured our presentation a little bit. I think now, because we kind of realized, so I think we're focusing on four projects but they're quite recent. I think it's not so much about milestones anymore.
I think we do have some, for example, like the experience studying.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, yeah, you're right. Maybe it's not milestones directly.
A lot of experiences come from there, or a lot of experiences that we had led up to these, like, but I think it's about community projects more so. And I started working on a platform that's called What Is My Work Worth, which I already wanted to do like 2 years ago. And originally I wanted to make an online calculator for typeface licenses, because people in general just like, it's very hard to calculate licenses because like you just have to price your own work, and it's like it's already there, you know, you have a digital project that you can endlessly send out to people, and then sometimes that leads to people questioning what is it actually worth if you can send it out so many times anyways and it's like 40 kilobytes. But obviously there, like, it was 3 years making this typeface, so I kind of got together with Max Weinland, who's a German graphic designer and type designer as well. And we've had a quite nice also online friendship in a way where we like read each other's texts and talk about Marxist ideas within graphic design. And then we just made this platform very, impulsively. And now it's more like a collection of different sources. Right now it's a bit focused on Germany and Austria, but we're trying to expand like in a more international context. We also take contributions, and him and I wrote a quite low level access text which just questions like the way how graphic design glorifies careers and glorifies this like genius lore that is kind of also in a, it's quite like, it's a quite patriarchal idea to like have the one genius, and we're just questioning that within graphic design because we feel it's still a quite present piece of lore that is happening. Yeah.
So basically, the What Is My Work Worth is an online archive or a website where people can also...
They can contribute, they can send us an email. We're also trying to expand our library. Like, so we have one page with texts. Right now it's one text, the one of Max and me. And then we're working on more contributions, kind of also regarding like terms and conditions, or like how do I write a proper contract. Like, it's very hands-on, it's very pragmatic. Maybe also like Solitype, because I think I do believe that activism has to happen in the most pragmatic way ever. Yeah.
Yeah.
And otherwise it's just links to texts, ideas, but also like, I don't know, how do you say, like federal lists of how to ask for money, guidelines, this kind of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's such a great project, because also looking back at the first years of working as a freelancer, I remember that I myself was super insecure talking about money, because you kind of never learn how to do it, and it's always this taboo topic. And
especially in Germany, though.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
So either you have it or you don't, but you don't really... Yeah, you don't ask and you don't talk about it. And only for me, maybe 2 years into working as a freelancer, I started talking with other creatives about their rates. And I don't know, we would send, or we're doing it now still, sending offers and cost estimates to each other, just to see like what other people charge, and
or to just support, like just to be like, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Just to get support
this.
And to feel more confident.
Yeah.
And, in high numbers, also to ask for...
Or high. Appropriate numbers.
Exactly. True. There you go. You know, it's still anchored
in
my brain.
I guess it's hard to talk about pays when we don't have the words for them.
Yeah.
And I believe I can speak on behalf of everyone listening, that this idea of this one genius, who would have that, this is a very common and well-known narrative also in the Finnish design history, to have these hero men who are only capable. Let's talk a little bit more about What Is My Work Worth project after a short break. Welcome back. You're listening to Helsinki Design Weekly, and today's guests are Charlotte Rode and Vivian Hoffman. Welcome again.
Thank you.
Hello.
We were talking about the project What Is My Work Worth, and why it is so needed. It's a website, an online archive, which speaks about the value of labor in graphic design. It aims to inform graphic design students, apprentices, wage workers and freelancers about all things concerning the value of the labor, including, for example, how to put an appropriate price tag on an amount of work. Where is the project going to next? What are your big plans for the office?
First of all, I think, so we started a Google Doc that is kind of collecting data of freelance designers, with a specialty on type design, but also just freelance graphic designers, because there is already a table with like wages of like hired graphic designers, and there's one with like intern salaries, which is also really interesting to see where interns are especially exploited. But we made one for graphic design wages, like to kind of check with like years of experience, country, maybe gender, hourly rate, but then also yearly income. And we did a first version and that one got deleted, so now we're rebuilding. And
oh no.
No, it was, we were using like an open source software, and it just like, it deleted itself. I don't know. And now we rebuild it. So if you're listening and you have an hourly rate, please contribute to our Google Doc. I'm really hoping we can build a bigger like library of that, because I think it's super helpful. Also because right now it's really focused on Germany and the Netherlands, and we don't aim to make this like a German specific platform, and I also know that in other countries wages are different. And then we're kind of going for more contributions. We would love to talk to lawyers, we would love to talk to people who know about maybe economics in a different way, just like the kind of information that you usually don't have access to, because in school you only learn about how to make design, but never how to facilitate design. Yeah, I think, but we're still in an orientation phase, and we're both really, Max is graduating right now, he's doing his master's, and I'm here. So we also, it's always like a struggle to find a moment to like plan, but we're working on it.
In some ways that also, for me, who I'm only learning about this fantastic project for the first time now, or when I was preparing for the episode, it also sounds like something that a professional association of designers might be able to support with. Or how come no one is not doing this?
Yeah, that's actually a really, really tricky question, because the call for unionizing within graphic design is quite old. And I think a lot of people have talked about it, and there are these associations. But I think this is also kind of linked to this genius narrative that, or maybe also how freelance designers are pitched against each other, and that still like a kind of, because designers don't see themselves as laborers or as workers, because it's kind of this glorified thing to be this like a person with semiotic power, or a person that can like more of an artist maybe, but then actually really doing wage work for a client. And I think there's like a difference within the narrative that you learn about life as a designer in school and the realities of doing like wage work. And I think that this competition that is kind of also taught within design education keeps people from actually being able, because there's like design associations, but often they're like, they come with a monthly fee, and they come with like kind of, they're a bit elitist, and a union is the opposite of elitist. It's the working class, right? And yeah, maybe it's about a discrepancy in the self-image of designers. Yeah.
Vivian agrees.
Nodding.
That works great in radio, by the way. We just wildly nod. Yeah, I guess something that also I spotted on the description of the project was that because if young designers who visually might be on a high level do not know what to charge, aren't constantly dump the prices, which is something that we should also pay attention to, that there's a lot of just simply lack of knowledge and lack of transparency within paying.
I think that it's quite easy to undersell yourself, I mean, I actually don't think that it's such a big problem of price dumping, because if you're that inexperienced that you don't know what to ask for in wages, then you probably also don't know how to properly sell and present and so on. So I think there, it's not, but it's just a pity. It's just really a pity for everyone. Nobody wins with that.
And I sorry.
No. I'm just the greedy boss. Maybe.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
But I suppose if we are given this idea, or the general idea seems to be that money and the amount of euros do define the value of things, I suppose we could also be talking about adding value to the whole idea of designing. In, like, if we talk about something more than just companies paying for the work, if we would able to appreciate design as the skill and as the superpower that it can be when used properly and correctly, we might also be onto some great changes.
Yeah.
So going back to young designers, would you to have any advice to some young design students who might be listening?
I mean, I think it's hard to say, because obviously when you just start off as a young designer, you have to make mistakes and you learn from them. And especially if you don't have a big portfolio yet with a lot of work to show, then maybe there's no way around doing some unpaid projects. I think that's unfortunately how it is still today. But you can be smart and choose those unpaid projects wisely. So don't work for a company that you don't really identify with, but rather look for stuff that really speaks to you. And do you have anything to add?
I think what is really good to, even if you just do it for yourself, to like write down your hours, and not just the designing hours, but also the hours that you spend writing emails or maybe doing the accounting for something. Because all of this, I mean, this is also something that you learn later, that like being a freelance designer also means that you're your own accountant and your own assistant and you're your own anything. And I think it's like 60% administration and 20% talking to people, and then 20% designing. And that is maybe a reality that hits quite hard later, because like I don't spend much time actually designing. But this also, I mean, you also get faster, so you can do like, that's fine. But I think it's just good to clock hours properly and ask. Don't undermine yourself already by saying that you can give discounts before anyone asked you to give a discount, because I used to do that.
Yes.
It's just like, yeah, here's my offer, but no, I can go lower if you need, but asked yet. Like,
yeah, yeah. Just, and always have contracts for everything. As soon as you put the pencil on the paper, there needs to be a working agreement, because you just save yourself a lot of stress and arguments and time and money. Yeah.
So did they tell you this in design school?
No, I think we had one class that was how to found a business or something. But I think I was very busy doing type design in that class. But also, it wasn't that interesting, because I also remember we had classes like that. Or I think I had also like copyright or something. We had a class
like this too, but it was the most boring thing.
It was, but actually now looking back, it was boring for us back then, but now
it would be good, right.
Exactly, yeah, because design school is the moment where you're so occupied with like composition or like tools. Also, design students talk a lot about how did you make that, and like, I don't know, because now it's like...
I think it's maybe a bit too early in, because in design school you're so focused on, okay, who am I as a designer? What do I want to design? And then you talk about how do I protect the design that I not yet know what it's going to be, you know? So it's a maybe a bit too far away.
I think it's just really... I think maybe one more tip that I have is like, go work in a design studio, because honestly, it makes you so much faster. It doesn't even matter if it's a cool design studio, using big air quotes, cool design studio. And it's just like super important for something. And okay, this is a very German word, but like work hygiene, which is also like, how do you make files? How do you name files? How do you like work within a structure with other people? And yeah, I think internships, even if you afterwards never want to work for anyone ever again, it's good to have done one or two just to like learn how other people work, because it's very easy to get trapped in your own ways. And you can learn so many ways of using InDesign shortcuts.
I suppose if we would now state that academic design education does deny the entrepreneurial reality, would something similar as your what is my work worth project be implemented into other fields of design? Could like fashion designers start their own archive or community
to share knowledge
and resources?
I think that would be great. Everyone should have that. Yeah. I mean, it's just always good to have like points of reference, I think, and like to always talk to each other rather than bidding against each other.
Yeah. Well, let's hope someone is listening and gets very inspired and then organized, and we'll continue after a very short break. So you're listening to Helsinki Design Weekly. My name is Anni Korkman, and this is a very special English-speaking episode with today's guests from Germany, Charlotte Rode and Vivian Hoffman. And next we'll talk a little bit about your project Solitype, which is an online platform that raises awareness and donations for people that are seeking refugee in Europe and NGOs that fight for humanitarian rights.
That's what it is.
That's what it is.
I mean, you said it earlier, how it kind of started. I mean, obviously, the whole crisis for people seeking refuge in Europe didn't only start when there was the fire in Moria, but yeah, it's been like this for many years, unfortunately. But when those fires happened, that was kind of a moment where you couldn't look away and not do anything. It just felt like we have to take some action. And then Charlotte and I were talking about it, and Charlotte had the idea of just donating, or like, I know you have typefaces that you give out for students, right?
Yeah.
For a reduced amount. Yeah. And her idea was to donate that amount. And then we thought, okay, let's both do it. And while we were thinking about that, it was
very spontaneous. Then I asked my housemate, who's also a type designer, we were housemates, but like then she just walked into the room and I asked her, and then we asked two others that we like kind of had on speed dial.
Yeah, because I think that's the whole idea behind it, that on social media, Instagram in particular, the more people you get on board, the bigger the audience will be.
Snowballing.
Exactly.
And yeah, sometimes, I mean, I think this is something that we struggle with, that we kind of feel like we don't want to make this into a social media spectacle, but it kind of has to be one. But I mean, it's not about the designers, but it's also about the designers. It's like, it's a bit ambiguous, but in the end, I think our approach is very pragmatic. And then sometimes that means that we also have to choose people for the size of their platform.
Yeah.
But we also sometimes have people that just make really nice typefaces. And it's about a balance. We try to have a very diverse curation. We try to also tap into different countries to kind of access different communities.
I mean, what we can say for the people who maybe don't know about the project, it's 5 designers every time. But yeah, as you said, it's very...
Yeah,
like, it's always like a mix
of designers.
Just to
take like half a step back, it's 5 designers every time, and the designers design.
So it's 5 type designers, exactly. And we do it 4 times a year.
Yeah, around.
Yeah, exactly. And invite new designers and just ask them what typeface they would like to contribute. And as we know how long it can take to design a typeface, we don't want to ask somebody to donate their work that they've been working on for 3 years and their income is dependent on it. So it can also be something unfinished, like something that you still have laying around and didn't find use for it.
Yeah. Yeah, like, or headline typefaces or like, also, I mean, yeah, we had very, very nice typefaces, and then mostly the people that donate and then get a typeface in return, we're kind of quite strict on saying it's not buying, like, this is not buying. People donate, and as a thank you, they receive a typeface file for their personal use. Now I lost my train of thoughts, but
no.
I think...
speaking of the donations themselves, we also said from the start, hey, we don't want to touch any money because then stuff just gets complicated. So each round we pick an NGO and the donations are going straight to that NGO, and people can send us a screenshot of their donation and then we send out the typefaces.
Yeah.
So it's a very, as you said, pragmatic process.
Yeah. And then, I mean, also... to kind of continue talking about our ongoing discussions is, for example, do we, like, when we choose the NGO or the organization, we always debate, like, are we choosing an organization that right now has a lot of urgency? Like, for example, we did a fundraiser for people coming from Ukraine right after the war started. But then also sometimes we're like, okay, maybe we should choose a topic that is not trending right now. And that again is also, it's quite interesting. I'm reading this book right now about narrative economics. And it's really interesting also how a certain actuality kind of then dictates how much money we will actually be making. And then it's like, are we going to be idealistic or are we going to be pragmatic about it? And I think these are like ethical questions that
it is. It's so tricky because like during the Ukraine war, people are still drowning in the Mediterranean.
Exactly.
You know, it doesn't stop just because there's another fucked up thing. Oh, sorry for swearing.
So we try to cover...
but it's also at the same time, I think you're also learning that you can't cover it all.
And then sometimes using a certain kind of media momentum helps to just generate more money. And then also I think what is important to add onto this is that sometimes people feel like people have more emotional connection to things that are closer to them, which is also why for the Ukraine fundraiser we made much more money than for all the other fundraisers that kind of have to do with non-European countries. But then what is, I think, really important to keep in the back of our heads, I mean, not in all cases of all countries that people are coming from to Europe, but it also has to do a lot with like colonialization of Europe, and they went to countries, colonized them, and then left them in such a bad state that corrupt governments could take power, and this is why people now want to come. And I think for us, also like looking at organizations like Frontex, for example, the European Border Police, that is like really, really shady. I think for us, this is where we want to raise awareness, because the EU is complicit.
That's the point. Like the money and collecting donations is one aspect of it, but I think, if not more important, we want to raise awareness because it's a topic that is not very
it's not part of the European narrative, Fortress Europe. And then I don't know, I feel really weird watching Eurovision Song Contest and it's like I don't know, for example, then it's just really weird to see this like European propaganda that kind of shows that we're also inviting Australia and we're also inviting Israel, but then it's like, you know.
So it's definitely important that people just talk about those issues. And I mean, the money is a good thing, but then at the end it's not going to change the situation too much, so we're hoping to make people think about it more and
and maybe to change, like, to help individual, like, that the money can help individual people to, like, I mean, once we had this organization that, for example, would provide how do you say, like legal support and this kind of stuff is just like, or we kind of once had this organization that told us, okay, from this money we could buy 100 sleeping bags, and this is kind of then it gives a gives a feeling of some kind of it something has happened.
That's true.
And when is the next round?
2nd of September?
October? July.
July,
July.
The wrong number.
Next, like in 6 weeks around.
Yeah. Okay.
Soon.
Yeah,
soon. How can people participate? They had to go to Instagram and follow you or?
Yeah, that is unfortunately as unromantic as it is, as unactivist as it sounds.
Well, we're all slaves for this.
It's just called, I think it's just at Solitype.
Yeah.
And to stay tuned, and we will always announce 1 week in advance, and then it's always open for a week, and people just see, like, we run a campaign for these 7 days, we introduce the typefaces, we introduce the NGO, and then people, it just works via email, that people send us a screenshot of their donation, and we send a typeface back.
Exactly.
And what can we use the typeface for? There were some limitations, not for commercial work. Is that correct?
Yeah. It's personal use. Yeah. I mean, our main, also quotation marks, target group are students, which is also funny again, because those are the people who don't have the most money in our society. Yeah. But it still works. And yeah, they can use it for university projects, personal projects. Yeah. And also, like, we had a few occasions also where people wanted to design a book or an album artwork, and then they can also always ask the designer if it's okay. And
I think it's just really important to say that we don't sell typefaces and we're not a type foundry.
Yeah.
We just give typefaces out as a treat.
As a treat, as a little motivation.
As a private, personal treat.
Treat that does you good. That's a very, very nice way to put it. Unfortunately, our time is coming to its end, but my last question is the classic one to both of you, Charlotte Rode and Vivian Hoffman. What will you be working with next?
Big question.
Usually the answer is, I'm not allowed to say.
Oh, that sounds so mysterious.
I like that.
Stay tuned.
I think I'm actually going to be working with my students on the new video essay of ContraPoints, which I made them watch, and we will discuss in our next session.
Interesting.
It's really good.
I think I'm going to work a lot off screen. I have a little workshop and I just want to build stuff.
That sounds wonderful. And thank you for joining me in Helsinki Design Weekly studio. And
thank you for the invitation.
Thank you for having us.
Helsinki. So I really like the statement of the Dutch What Design Can Do organization. They write that today's systems are deeply flawed. From governance and decision-making bodies to entire economic systems, the most prominent societal structures are driven by short-term and profit-first values. The resulting products, services and policies not only waste valuable resources, but often perpetuate long-standing injustices. Realizing this, one could argue that the world's biggest system flaws are, in fact, in the end, design flaws. Thank you for this conversation, and I wish you two best of luck in your future endeavors, and that you keep empowering the global creative community. Ja kiitos myös sinulle, joka kuuntelit tätä hyvin spesiaalia Helsinki Design Weeklin juttua. Se, mitä yritin aikaisemmin sanoa liittyen oman työn hinnoitteluun, jotenkin liittyy varmasti siihen, että jos me vaan löydetään sanoja puhumaan myös suunnittelutyön arvosta, niin ehkä me löydetään myös lisää sanoja puhumaan ylipäätään koko suunnittelun ympäristön arvosta ja näin jälleen lisäämään muotoilun ja arkkitehtuurin lukutaitoa. Vivian ja Charlotte on siis ollut täällä Helsingissä Grafian vieraina, Huiput Creative Festivalin esiintyjinä. Huiput Creative Festival on joka kevät järjestettävä luovan suunnittelun kärkitapahtuma, joka kerää vuosittain noin 400 luovan alan ammattilaista ja opiskelijaakin kuulemaan puheenvuoroja ulkomaisilta ja kotimaisilta luovan alan huippunimiltä. Inspiroivien puheenvuorojen lisäksi tämä yhden päivän mittainen tapahtuma pitää sisällään myös erilaisia workshoppeja, ja kohtaamisia. Kieli on englanti, kuten oli myös tämän jakson kieli. Huiput Creative Festival on nyt tältä vuodelta tosiaankin päättynyt, mutta grafian toimintaan voit tutustua Helsingissä Uudenmaankadun luonnosgalleriassa. Siellä on mahtavia vaihtuvia näyttelyitä. Kiitos kun kuuntelit. Jatketaan ensi viikolla. Juttuvinkkejä saa lähettää Helsinki Design Week Instagramissa. Tai vaikka ihan sähköpostitse tai käyppä nettisivuilla helsinkidesignweek.com, tilaa weeklin uutiskirje. Jatketaan. Voi hyvin.